The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
What's up? My name is Zachary Bennett, and we're going to take 30 seconds from your podcast to tell you about Pets Life with a Z. Pets Life is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog, or cat and dog, for those of you with both. It's 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code Omaha and save 20% off every online order. Or if you're doing things by phone, mention Omaha and get that same 20% off any phone order. One more time, that's PetsLife with a Z, PetsLife.com.
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha. And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes as well. Look up Midwest Swing Podcast. I don't know if it's featuring Brandon Warren or with Brandon Warren, but it is pretty easy to find on iTunes. Give us a review, positive if you like it, negative. Don't do negative. How about you just reach out to us? Tell us what we can do better. We'll do it better, and then you can give us a 5-star rating. We got a couple on there right now, but we would like a few more, maybe get us up some of those lists in terms of popularity. I'm joined, as I have been every week for quite some time, by Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha. You can find him on Twitter at tschreier3. Tom, how are we doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. We do have a different guy behind the controls today, Zach Bennett, who is the faceless and voiceless today, but he's doing a nice job. So we really appreciate having him here in studio as we get prepared to have our meeting here at the top of the hour. But before we get to any of that, let's bring in our guest. We've got the Detroit beat writer for the Tigers, who is actually on vacation right now. It's Anthony Fenich. Now, Anthony, did I say that correctly?
Fenich.
Gosh,
I got it right.
It's every other for me, so Fenich. Okay.
I got a negative review coming up. So, yep.
Well, that's very fair, absolutely. So you look at your Twitter. It's Anthony Fenich, all one, no underscore or anything like that. Haven't tweeted in a couple days. It looks like you're off the grid a little bit. How's that going for you?
It's going a little bit of a road trip up the East Coast, getting away from the beat for a few days. They're obviously in Minnesota, so George Sipple, one of our Free Press sports editors, he'll be there covering the team. But for one reason or another, it's good to get away from him for a few days.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that the grind of the season, especially at this time of year, can kind of wear on you a little bit, and it can on the team as well. I got to ask you, though. This is a team right now, 65-59, 7.5 games out of first place behind behind Cleveland, and 3 games out of that second wild card spot in the American League. You look up and down this roster, and you got guys on the disabled list. You got guys that are not performing. What is holding this team together right now?
It's just the fact that they have, they just have a lot of winning veteran kind of guys, and they've been able to kind of grind it out, but it hasn't been good. It wasn't a good homestand here. They went 2-5 against teams, the Royals and the Red Sox. Their starting pitching is what I thought was going to be a big concern on the stretch, and it's actually been better than I had expected coming down the stretch. But the thing is that I don't think that starting pitching is going to keep up like that. We saw Michael Fulmer get roughed up a little bit last time out. I wouldn't expect that to continue, most of the time, because Fulmer's really good. But guys like Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd, you guys will see those guys against the Twins coming up here this week. Those are the guys, Andy Ball Sanchez, those are the performances I don't really expect to continue the way that they have. So, really, they've just been ravaged by injuries. And you got Cameron Maven back on Sunday, which is good, but I'm still kind of skeptical about the effectiveness of his thumb. I think he came back a little quickly just to get back on the field because he's kind of one of those spark plug kind of guys. I think they'll be in the wild card race to the end. I don't think they'll probably win it. And the division's looking kind of shaky right now because, the more this gap increases between them and Cleveland, 7.5 games is a lot.
Left side of the infield on the disabled list as well. How has that hamstrung the team here lately? I know Castellanos is a big loss being out for quite some time now. He was really coming into his own as a player. But, Iglesias, too, as far as defensively, I'm sure helps quite a bit. Offense has been way down for him, which I think people expected back in his Boston days. But how much has it hurt to have those two guys on the DL?
I mean, it hurts just because, like you said, it's the whole left side of the infield. Castellanos, obviously, to me, is the kind of the bigger blow because he's just kind of been having a breakout season, and he's one of those guys that, you know, last week when I had all these injuries, you lose Castellanos and Maiden. I mean, those are two really key guys. Like, you look at the numbers, and you don't really see Maiden's true impact on the team. I mean, he's a guy that's hit second, and he's been really good this season in terms of, like, yeah, he's hitting 320, but it's been a different kind of 320 where he's hitting. He's been able to hit. He showed the ability to hit in front of Cabrera, which not a lot of guys can do. He's very conscious of getting Cabrera up to the plate. But back to the original question, you know, I think they've been able to weather the Jose Iglesias injury pretty well. They traded for Eric Ibar. It was a whatever trade, in my opinion. You know, Michael Vilas was struggling with the bat. Michael Vilas gives you a little bit more defensively in terms of playing a lot of positions, but Ibar's fine. He's solid, you know, veteran kind of player. So he's filled in there for Iglesias, gives him a left-handed bat too. But Castellanos is the guy they're missing, and to me, if Justin Upton doesn't pick it up here, coming back until mid-September when we kind of expect Castellanos to come back, that's going to be the biggest blow of all these injuries.
So Miguel Cabrera, it looks like he's having a pretty classic Miguel Cabrera season. You can tell. Please correct me if I'm wrong, if that's not true. And has he stayed healthy for the most part all year? I know that was a big issue in the last couple of seasons.
Yes, he has stayed healthy for the last couple of seasons, or for this season. He's having like a pretty normal Miguel Cabrera kind of year. A lot of power's back, and he's just there's really no complaints. You know, early in the season, he was struggling a little bit, but this is a normal Miguel Cabrera kind of year.
And you had mentioned Cameron Maybin. How crazy is it that he's outperforming, and not by a small margin, Justin Upton?
It's kind of crazy. I expect Upton to have a good year this year because of where he was slotted to hit in the Tigers lineup at the beginning of the season. I mean, he was slotted to hit second, you know, in front of Cabrera, behind Ian Kinsler, and I thought that was going to be a very good spot for him. Remember, Justin Upton came from San Diego and Atlanta, Arizona, where he was like the main guy that guys didn't want to let him win, let him beat them. And I thought in the Tigers lineup, the way that they would, they had just top to bottom like a bunch of good hitters, and Upton was kind of like an afterthought a little bit. I thought they would really, really play well for him. He's just struggled this year. He's just been bad. I mean, there's really no other way around it. I think he could probably, you know, establish into the season with, he had two home runs on Sunday against the Red Sox, really powered him up there. I think he could salvage a little bit of his season if he, sorry, there's like a...
Yeah, I'm wondering, where are you, dude?
there's a fire truck that just ran, drove by two of them. I think he could salvage the season if he starts, you know, right now when they need him, when Castellanos is out, they need him to be a middle-of-the-order bat. So if he comes up and he kind of plays to his potential these next couple of weeks, I think he can kind of salvage the season. It's just been a struggle for him. And I think some of it has to do with the National League to American League, too. I don't think it's talked about enough. But Upton's been bad. I mean, he'll tell you. He's been bad this season.
So it's a three-game series. In fact, it splits a couple road trips for the Twins. It's just a quick three-game series here at Target Field before they get back out on the road. Matchups, Anibal Sanchez versus Kyle Gibson tonight, Matt Boyd versus Tyler Duffy going on Wednesday, and then Daniel Norris against Jose Berríos to wrap it up on getaway day Thursday afternoon.
Berríos is my boy, man. Berríos is my boy.
Got to get him going.
Yeah.
And so it would seem to be beneficial to the Twins to miss Fulmer based on his season numbers, maybe not based on how he pitched recently, and to miss Verlander. But the two names that Twins fans aren't going to recognize, you know, Sanchez has been a Tiger for quite a while now, and he's actually not pitched all that well this year, are going to be Boyd and Norris. What can you tell Twins fans about those two guys and what to expect on the back two games of the series?
Okay, so Boyd and Norris, those are the two guys that Tigers got from the Blue Jays last season for David Price.
Sure.
Obviously, Norris was a little, one second, I'm walking a little bit faster. There's like a machine or something. sorry, this is a real...
Real radio, man. It's raw
real
audio.
Real radio. This is how you guys do it. So, Boyd Norris came over in the David Price trade. Norris, to me, has a little bit more potential than Boyd. Boyd's pitched actually pretty well this season, though. He lowered his arm slot. And in a couple weeks from, or no, once two starts ago, against the Rangers. He really pitched really well against a really good Rangers lineup. I mean, you guys know the names in that Rangers lineup.
Mm-hmm.
The thing to look for with Boyd is, like I said, with the lower arm side, his slider, it seemed to be cutting a little bit better. I mean, it's kind of like a slider-cutter hybrid, so to speak. Norris has kind of been, you know, even though I think Norris is, at the end of the day, Norris is going to be better than Boyd. Boyd seems like a little bit more of a finished product at this point because Norris has battled injuries this season. He hasn't been going deep into games. I don't know if the players are still hitting the way that they kind of were. Like, they were hitting pretty well, I'd say, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they were the top offense in baseball in August as of about a week ago.
Yeah, so I think that if they're still hitting pretty good, I think they're going to give the Tigers a little bit of trouble here this series. You know, the thing is that you look at the Tigers and Twins, and the Tigers have really beat up on them this year. But again, those three starting pitchers are kind of like the question marks for me, in my opinion. You know, Boyd and Norris are still kind of like second-year guys. Sanchez has really struggled this year. I mean, we're talking about a guy whose ERA is still over 6,
mm-hmm.
even though he's been pitched pretty well as of late. So I think it should be an interesting series. Like I said, Quinn's got to get Barrios going, man. I want to see some improvement out of him, like, down the stretch. And I think it's good that I do think it's good. They have Buxton back up for him. Am I right?
No, he went back down again.
Okay, so he's still in AAA, but I think it's good that the Twins are letting Barrios kind of take his lumps to the major league level right now.
Right.
Because I think that'll work well for him in the future.
Well, and what happened, a lot of people made this comparison, is that Michael Fulmer came up, struggled, and the Tigers let him battle through it, and now he's been very, very solid. What, you know, again, you said his last start wasn't that great, but what has gone into making him such a solid pitcher, and, you know, what's going on for him?
Fulmer is just nasty. I mean, there's really no other way around it. It's really been surprising. I definitely didn't expect him to be, like, you know, leading the American League in ERA or pitching the way that he has. He's been very good. And I think the thing that really took him to the next level was his changeup early in the season. I mean, now you look at it, it's one of the best changeups in baseball, one of the least hard-hit changeups in baseball. It really started against the Rays in early May, and to me, and from talking to guys with the Tigers, the thing, it's not only the stuff, which is really good. I mean, he's got a mid-90s fastball, he's got a wipeout slider, he's got all that, but he's got a different kind of poise on the mound, and that's something that, you know, Justin Verlander talks about, and pitching coach Rich Scooby talks about. He never seems rattled, he never seems frustrated, and I think for a young pitcher, that's very impressive, but stuff-wise, his changeup. That was something that he didn't make the team out of spring training because they sent him down to the minor leagues to work on his changeup. And he really credits Jared Soto-Almagia and James McCann a lot for kind of forcing him to throw it when he really wasn't comfortable throwing it. Now he's comfortable throwing it, and as you see, it's really paid dividends. So Fulmer, he's probably, you know, he just got beat up pretty bad by the Red Sox. The Red Sox are a good team, you know. And
for sure.
I think as we go on, he might have a couple hits swung away, but he's been very impressive this year. And it is good for the Twins to miss him because he could do some damage.
For sure. It looks like the Tigers haven't gotten much production offensively out of their catchers, but defensively, would you say they've picked up the slack?
Yeah, for sure. James McCann is completely just like 100% shut down the running game. Yeah, he's a guy that I think he's been really dealing with an ankle injury from early in the season really lingered. And that kind of lingered for a little bit, and I think he's been dealing with that. He started to turn it around. Both him and Salton Lamont, I mean, they're not going to hit for average that much. But if, you know, defensively, McCann to me is one of the best catchers in the American League. Just the way he shuts on the running game. I mean, I don't have numbers in front of me, but teams are just not running on him. And he's been picking it up at the plate, too, as of late, showing a little bit more power. And I think that's because the ankle is finally – an ankle injury for a catcher is kind of tough.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that's because he's finally starting to feel the recovery from that ankle injury. But it took a while. Soto Lamacchia, he'll give you some pop off the bench a little bit, but he's a guy that's still got a lot of swing and miss. The one thing that's good about Soto Lamacchia is he walks. And so if he's out there, you know, striking out a few times, at least he's walking. So that's good.
Zimmerman on the Zimmerman on the DL, I believe it's the second time this season. He started out so hot and has kind of normalized a little bit. How much does it bug them to not have him in the rotation right now?
I think it bugs Jordan Zimmerman more than it bugs the Tigers, and I'm sure it bugs the Tigers a lot. I mean, he said this was kind of one of the most frustrating years of his season. I mean, yeah, they need him back because of what I told you, but really, you know, the way that he was pitching when he came back that one game against the White Sox, I mean, he's not going to do any good looking like that.
Right.
So they're really hoping that they found out what was wrong with kind of his, like, right neck and the muscles in there. But they need a back and effective Jordan Zimmerman because really since that first month of the season when he was really pitching very well, I mean, 0.55 ERA, AL pitcher of the month, ever since then he's really been kind of mediocre at best. So they need him back. I mean, because that's kind of what this is all, this whole, you know, pennant race and the opportunity to compete here in the American League has kind of been built on is the fact that you could have Zimmerman and Verlander and Fulmer pitching in a postseason series, you know, and not have to lean on the Boyds and the Norrises and the Sanchez. I mean, remember, they took Sanchez out of the rotation earlier in the year. That's mm-hmm. how bad he was. So they need Zimmerman back. So his progression right now, he's going to be, I believe, throwing another bullpen here in Minnesota and then perhaps going on a rehab assignment starting on Friday. He's going to need three rehab starts, though, so he won't be back until, you know, the first week of September at the earliest. And that's, you know, that's given he looks the way that they want him to look because last time, I don't think he thought he didn't need another rehab start, but the Tigers, I think, would have liked him to. And he comes out against the White Sox and kind of really struggles, and he's back to square A. But short answer, they need Jordan Zimmerman back, but they need Jordan Zimmerman back if he's Jordan Zimmerman, not if he's this guy that we saw last start.
Speaking of frustrating, how frustrating has it been for you to watch our old friend Mike Pelfrey, who is now on the disabled list?
It's been frustrating because he started to turn the corner around a little bit right before he got hurt. You know, he's a guy that all the Tigers wanted him to do was to eat up some innings at the back end. And to me, that is kind of code for, like, just, like, don't go out and give up five runs. That's not, like,
exactly.
a real vote of confidence when they say that about Pelfrey. But as the summer wore on, he started to do that. He started pitching, like, a little bit better. Now, look, he's always going to be giving up hits. I mean, he's probably not anymore since he's been on the shelf for a couple weeks now. But he was among the AL leaders in hits. It's just that he's very hittable. Tigers tend to think that he could get something out of the bullpen. But to me, the questionable thing was why they gave him a 2-year deal.
Right.
When some guys with other teams were, you know, saying, like, this was a guy we didn't think was going to even get, like, a major league job. And the Tigers are out here getting 2 years, $16 million. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see what they do going forward. Even this season now, because with the emergence of Boyd and Norris, Sanchez, where is the spot for Pelfrey now? Could he be the odd man out, going to be a long man in the bullpen? That wouldn't surprise me. Off the field, though, man. Nobody owns. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about. I think it was you. That, I think it might have been you that tweeted it. Nobody owns a bad Mike Pelfrey stuff like Mike Pelfrey.
No, he eats it, man.
You don't even gotta ask him any questions. He just starts off with, "I was really bad today," and like, there's no, and you know, Zimmerman's kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that those two have kind of, I don't know, they always hang out together. You can tell that those guys really get each other, Zimmerman and Pelfrey. Unfortunately, right now the similarities extend to they're both on the disabled list. But yeah, man, Pelfrey when he thinks the map, He doesn't shy away from it at all.
The opposite of Mike Pelfrey has been Justin Verlander. How close is he to his vintage self?
Look, it depends on like what his vintage self is. I mean, this is the best he's probably pitched in a while. I mean,
so maybe it's the new Verlander, but it's not the same old Verlander.
Yeah, I'd say it's the new Verlander, not the same old Verlander. When you think of the same old Verlander, I think you go back to like 2011 when he was, you know, MVP, Cy Young. But I tell you what, he's just like a notch below that. He might not have that 101, you know, in the tank anymore. But his 95 is working with movement. His command is better than ever. He's got this short little slider that he's been able to manipulate speeds and really be really successful with that. He's going deep into games. I mean, he's been an ace this year, and I really wouldn't expect that to continue. But the big thing is, guys, is that he was just hurt the last few years. I mean, he had that poor muscle surgery, and that takes probably, you know, a year and a half to really fully recover from. During that time, he was kind of like fighting his mechanics because his body wasn't right. So he had a little bit of a shoulder blip. Last spring training, it was a tricep. But ever since the second half of last season, when he won a hit the Angels at home in a complete game shutout, that he gave up a no-hitter in the ninth inning, going to the third. Chris Iannetta, that's got to keep you up at night sometimes. But he's just been outstanding, and it's been interesting for someone that's watched him his entire career. It's been interesting to see how he's evolved, because there were questions in my mind, not knowing what was going on behind the scenes in terms of his health, you know, but just looking at the numbers, the velocity, the radar guns, it was fair to assume, and I did over the past couple of years, where is this going to go for Verlander? And to his credit, he's really evolved into, you know, staying at the level that he's accustomed to being. This is a very confident guy that knows that he wants to be one of the best, you know.
We got two more questions, and we'll get you back on that vacation. How does the bullpen look overall for the Tigers?
Much better than it has the past couple of years. Not their weak point this year, even though it's struggled as of late. I thought it looked a lot better, you know, a couple of weeks ago before, you know, Francisco Rodriguez is just kind of become like a trick pitcher at the back end of the bullpen, throwing a lot of changeups, mm-hmm. a lot more changeups than fastballs. He's been living on the edge a lot, blew a couple saves. With that being said, Tigers have been very pleased with Rodriguez and the way that he's kind of taken some of the younger pitchers under his wing, so to speak. Outside of that, Shane Green's been very good for the bullpen. He's been a guy that they moved him from the starting role, and his stuff really plays up well. Now, the thing is, you look at his ERA, and I think it's 5-2 or something, which isn't good, but that really isn't indicative of kind of the way that he's pitched this year. He's been their biggest piece in the bullpen. Before he came there, he just pretty much walked into the bullpen as one of their setup guys. Bruce Rondon showed signs. Justin Wilson struggled as of late, but I think he's been battling elbow soreness all year. The one big minus is Mark Lowe. He's just been horrible. I'm surprised he's on the team. He isn't that bad.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But they got him for a 2-year deal too. So the Tigers aren't really a team that really cuts bait that very easily. So the bullpen to me is not what it was in years past when it was what was going to kill them. And it could be a strong point outside the lines. It's just been fluid, you know. For the first 3 months, Wilson was really good. He struggled the last couple weeks. Lowe's been bad all year, but to me, you know, Payrod's just—he's just a veteran. He's just one of those guys that get it done somehow. I don't know how he does, you know. Cause there's many days where I'm like, all right, he's going against, you know, two lefties against the Mets or something, because his lefties have been his kind of his
kryptonite.
So he goes and gets it. He always seems to get it done, though.
Does your gut say that this is going to be a playoff team?
No, not right now. Just based on, you know, where they're at, the standings. It's just tough, guys, because you see all the guys that are on their team. You know, they have a lot of good baseball players. Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez. I mean, I can go on and on. J.D. Martinez has hit the cover up ball. Mm-hmm. They got Verlanders and Fulmers. They have a lot of really good players on their team. I just don't know. If this is going to be a team that can get to the playoffs, because I think their starting pitching is going to fade a little bit down the stretch, and you know how big starting pitching is. And I just don't know if they're better than some of the teams that they're competing against to win the wild card with. I don't think they're going to catch the Indians. That's kind of an uphill battle. But my gut says no, but they'll probably finish 2 or 3 out.
So the Royals, too, you guys both think will fall short? I mean,
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so, too. But they got that thing going, man. Like, they're playing really well, and they're like, believing in themselves.
Kind of hulk up.
The praying
they're,
mantis,
they're
man.
They're hulking up, man.
Yeah.
I was in that clubhouse like each day during the Tiger series, and they seem to have a really good vibe going. I don't think they're gonna make it, but I think this is a team that's like, since they didn't sell off parts of the deadline, they're gonna be an interesting team. They're gonna be like kind of like a pesky team on the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
That's really gonna, you know, be a thorn in the Tiger side and other teams that are trying to get to the postseason. So I don't think they'll make it, but I just think it's impressive. You know, a second year after, you know, going Game 7 of the World Series, winning the World Series, you can tell they've ran out of gas a little bit, but they're still out here in the heat of August fighting, and that's impressive to me.
Well, Anthony, thank you for your time. Get back on that vacation. That's Anthony Fenick of the Detroit Free Press. You can follow him on Twitter, at Anthony Fenick. Anthony, we'll see you next time the Tigers are in Target Field, I think.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, man. That was Anthony Fenick, once again, from the Detroit Free Press. Always like having him on. Gives us a fresh perspective. Probably he's got to be one of the youngest beat reporters in all of baseball, wouldn't you say? As far as a daily beat reporter, there's not too many that are going to be of that age.
Yeah, I would think so. Cool job for him, too. I believe he grew up in Michigan, right? And hometown team. Yeah.
So, I think the job a lot of writers would dream of, to cover the local team and kind of rise up through the system. So, Tom, the one thing before we dive into any Twins talk that I want to talk to you about was the emerging incident in the Oakland A's clubhouse between old friend Danny Valencia and Billy Butler. Details emerging as the days go on. Susan Slusser of the Chronicle, I think it is.
That media.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah, I think so.
She's absolutely fantastic. She was the BBWAA president before Lavelle E'Neill III was the Star Tribune guy here in town, and she's one of the best beat reporters in all of baseball. And so she had it blow by blow, I guess, pun intended, for the situation between the two. And so basically what had happened, and feel free to fill in any blanks if you think I'm missing it.
Yeah.
Danny Valencia is talking to an equipment rep at his locker, and the rep looks in there and says, well, that's a pair of shoes that aren't approved. Now, I don't know if it was a pair of spikes or a pair of just like running shoes or what it was exactly, but basically he was getting quizzed by the person who has his endorsement, or maybe it's a potential endorsement. It seemed to me, though, that it was a situation where, anyway, Danny said, oh, yeah, no, I definitely only wear those, and I'm out running, or some kind of apparently an excuse. And Billy Butler piped up. He's like, nah, man, you're lying.
Which is kind of a jerk thing to do.
It is in some respects. I'll grant that. He's like, nah, man, you're lying. And so I don't know if it actually cost Danny the endorsement, which I think Slusser said could be $10,000 to $20,000. You know, not an insignificant amount of cash, but to guys making millions of dollars, again, it's not a ton of money either. But anyway, after the rep left, Danny says, how dare you talk to me like that in front of a rep?
Yep.
And in fact, there was some funny phrasing I think you got in front of you. Do you have
it's loud talk? Don't ever loud talk me in front of a rep. That was wrong. That's what he said.
And to me, that just sounds so tame for clubhouse.
You saw the
beginning
Butler
of a
said,
brawl,
right?
And so he's basically like, "Well, you're not going to do anything about you B word." And
yeah, BAS.
Yeah, and so Danny attacked him, punched him in the temple, and took him down. Butler's like, "I'm fine," and now he's on the concussion protocol. The 7-day disable list. So Danny knocked him out, and I don't know how do you sort out the fallout from this, Zach?
Well, I have questions.
Sure.
Does Billy Butler, is the other name involved?
Yeah.
Does he interrupt a conversation? Or,
I believe he pipes in. Yeah, I think he pipes up while the person is quizzing Danny Valencia. Wrong Danny there.
Okay, because that's one thing. And that is highly inappropriate, as I see it. But if somebody's doing their due diligence and asking teammates about the shoes,
it sounded like he butted in.
Then that's unprovoked snitching is what we would call that, I think. And I have a problem with that.
But see,
definitely.
Twitter has taken up the cause for Danny Valencia, and the funny thing is Valencia's got the bad rap where he was playing well in the middle of the season, and the A's were like, we might just cut him. Like he had like an 8-something.
Oh,
OPS.
He was kind of a pain in the ass at times.
But that's
in
the thing,
room.
Yeah. So all these players, Eric Hosmer, former teammate with the Royals, he piped up. So I love playing with Danny Valencia, and Coco Crisp, current teammate. Oh, I love playing with Danny Valencia. I don't understand where all this bad rap comes from.
Trevor Plouffe always said he liked him.
Trevor Plouffe liked him, but Trevor Plouffe has evolved as a person and player. You know, back in those days, he didn't like talking to media. He was seemed to be like he really didn't like being questioned. He's turned into a really media savvy guy. Cole DeVries, friend of the program, really likes Danny Valencia as well. But he told me he understands why media might not like him. The entire Twitter sphere, whatever, has taken up for Danny Valencia in this situation.
Have we seen the shoes?
No.
We haven't. Because that makes a difference,
so to
right?
clarify, he said these are spikes that he wears just in pregame.
Sure.
There's also a report from the Chronicle that one player specifically told Slusser, I assume, they go at it every day. So this is like a beef between two players.
So
definitely.
is it an actual beef, or is it like Kurt Suzuki and Eduardo Escobar, like
that seems more friendly.
Flicking each other and
No, he would tackle him.
They're just straight up. So go at it is an ambiguous phrasing. We don't know.
This sounds like they don't like each other.
Yeah, and I can see both of those guys having big personalities. And again, in a tough season too, that kind of thing is going to wear on you. You know, you're playing games that in theory don't matter. You're not going to be in the spoiler role, but what I don't care for is that everyone who's taking up Valencia's cause is basically ignoring the fact that Valencia was lying.
That is wrong.
He was legit lying to this sponsor. It's like, if you want to get paid, do what you promised to do.
Yeah.
And so I think both guys did things that were not okay, and there's not really a winner. In fact, the fact that Valencia didn't get hurt probably makes him the de facto winner of the fight, but he still... like
sounded like a sucker punch.
None of this happens if he didn't lie.
Yeah.
And so, again, I know there's like the bro code of like...
It's not even bro code. It's just don't snitch.
I get it. But at the same time, it's like the dude was lying.
Well, not only that, but these guys get millions of dollars, a whole bunch of shoes. It also tends to be what sustains them. Either some people will say actually save your money, your income literally from the team and just, you know, use sponsorship
like
money.
Like Gronk, man. He's never touched a penny of his salary.
LeBron James.
His
NBA salary is just moot. Doesn't matter with all the, you know, he's got a lifetime deal with Nike. I think the shoes matter. I mean, because of the Bay Area we're talking here. I mean, if this is some whack pair of Steph Curry's that he's rocking and Billy Butler's like, I just can't have teammates who rock that. That's shameful.
Steph Curry 8s that everyone was making fun of on Twitter.
Yeah. Those are so bad.
If it's a pair of those and, you know, you're Billy Butler snitching, it's like, I get it. Fine, go ahead. But
the Easy Strider going to pick up the newspaper 8s or, you know, there was that entire Twitter thing where they were making fun of those shoes.
Yeah, and Bill Simmons ended up wearing them on a live appearance on a late night show.
Were they as bad as...
They're whack. They're horrible. They're whack, which, if they were the shoes in question, I would have a lot less opinions about Billy Butler.
Maybe he needs to take the path of, like, Starberries and just make them $10.
Oh, my goodness. That would be hilarious.
I was reading about those the other day, and I was reading about Stephen Berry's, who went under, like, 8 years ago, and everybody just loved going to get in the sports apparel there. But anyway, getting off the path a little bit. So I don't know that anybody is the winner in this situation.
No.
You know, I think
except for fans who are having fun with it.
Well, sure. And so, but Twitter's always so quick to need to take a side.
Yeah.
And Twitter always also will take the side of the guy who had been a bad guy in the past. Baseball Twitter is so weird with their opinions and how they take on certain sides. It's basically hive mind, I guess.
Yeah.
And literally almost nobody's willing to say, well, how about the other side of the story? It's always...
Well, no one wants to take the corporate side, right?
Or the devil's advocate. Nobody wants to be the devil's advocate. Although, you know, it's just... I don't think anybody comes away from that looking very good.
No.
So, anyway, the local ball team, 49-75 coming up. Not a great road trip. What are you expecting in this three-game series against Tigers? Like Anthony said, and like I mentioned as well, it's not exactly Detroit's biggest, best 1-2-3 as far as pitching matchups. You know, what is going to keep fans compelled and interested at this time of year?
You know, I would start with Max Kepler and just, you know,
he's playing, he's been off for three games now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I always temper expectations with young players, you know, I said when people brought up his name, watch out for a sophomore slump, just given that he's set a very high bar and that he is still a very young player. And even within a season, we just see these slumps and kind of these ebbs and flows, and expecting, a guy hits three home runs in a game, we expect him to be Justin Morneau. And I think, you know, it's going to take time for him to build up a reputation like that. You know, how Joe Mauer does. Joe Mauer was, I mean, his average isn't terrible. He was getting up into that .280 range, kind of closer and closer to .400 on base percentage. Struggled to play lately, and it seems like maybe his legs are bugging him again, which, you know, not the injury you want to crop up. But I think for him, it's important to have a strong finish because his role now is more as a leader. And we've just learned with Brian Dozier and Kurt Suzuki and Trevor Plouffe, if you are not playing well, you can't lead. I mean, that's just kind of the end game with that.
Nobody will care what you have to say.
Yeah, or maybe you just don't want to say anything because you feel like you're not performing.
How much of the Royals, you know, Anthony mentioned the Royals picking it up. How much of that is them getting fat on the Twins? They've played now, let's see, I believe it was in the last 10 games, they've played the Twins 7 times and they've won 6 of those games.
Yeah.
That goes a long way towards fixing any quote-unquote slumps that you're going
You know, through. The Royals are the team that, you know, it's funny how the tables have turned. They always said that the Twins actually had like a home field advantage back in the day going to Kauffman Stadium, like the Joe Mauer's hit well.
Whoever knew that it would turn the other way?
But the Royals are looking more kind of like those fun and young twins, kind of the early Gardenhire era with, you know, McKevich.
To me,
and
it's virtually identical to the 2002-2003 twins.
And you know those are good teams when, A, if you, you know, you see the shot of the fans and they all kind of have a different jersey and you see the same characters over and over again. I know they've lost a few and that there's probably going to be attrition as their salaries go up, but Hosmer's still there. And
I think it's after next year that it's big where Kane, Hosmer, and Moustakas might all be free agents at like the same time, which is going to be impossible to keep those guys.
Yeah, and personally, I think how that system works is you look at the Cardinals where they just kind of pick and choose which veteran players they keep around. You know, they commit to Wainwright, they let Pujols go, they commit to this one and not that one. So it's not a bad thing necessarily to trade veteran players or to deal from a position of strength. You just don't want – now I know Arcia just got released, right, by the Rays.
He got DFA'd, yeah.
But you don't want weird situations like that where a guy who literally has, what, like 34 major league home runs under his belt to just kind of go away.
A guy slugged 450 at age 25. But at the same time, if you want to appeal to the authority of the Cardinals, you have to not make mistakes. If right. Arcia goes to wherever he goes next, does nothing, and he flames out by age 26, 27 – you didn't
and
make a mistake.
Baseball's a weird sport. That can happen.
So, I mean, the thing with the Cardinals is they just don't make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, Pujols, they didn't give him the – they did offer him a big contract, and that would have probably looked bad. But, you know, they had Hayward let him walk. You know,
yeah.
They traded Shelby Miller before Shelby Miller did anything.
And he was really hyped.
He was
really
a huge prospect. And, you know, they signed Matt Holliday to the big deal. So they signed guys to big deals. But they pick and choose. They have tons of pitching prospects that they seem to fall off the wagon. You know, guys get hurt all the time. Jaime Garcia's battled elbow stuff.
Yeah.
It's been a situation where they have just made all the right decisions. And again, the interesting thing too is Kansas City is like right next to them, or like it's in the proximity.
Yeah.
So you know that market, in theory, can sustain that kind of a payroll.
I bet you there's a lot of Kansas City fans who became Cardinals fans for a while. But not that you would blame them because Kansas City was so bad, but probably are coming back. And if you're going to appeal to a fan base that has already kind of followed the Cardinals closely, you probably want to emulate that team.
If those fans haven't jumped back yet, though, they're not going to. Because after two World Series appearances, and with how wildly popular the Royals have become, which is great for the game to have that kind of popularity from a previously dead fan base, or not dead, but on life support. It was very quiet.
Yeah.
I think it's great for the game to have that happen.
I'm just saying, for a guy who all of a sudden is kind of back on the bandwagon, if you are, you really can't blame for someone for not wanting to support a really bad team like that. You know, if you were following the Cardinals closely, you want to see, you know, if you're the Royals, you want to show them kind of something similar.
You want to follow that path.
Yeah.
All right, here's the plan for this upcoming series. I'm covering tonight. I'm covering Thursday afternoon. So it's going to rain on Wednesday.
It is.
So fans who are thinking about going to the game tomorrow, it's expected to rain. It will probably bring back the hashtag Raindance Schreier.
Yep, thanks,
who coined
Ben.
That? Do you remember
Ben
who
Reimington.
Ben Reimington. Great. Yep. Ben is great. Great stuff. He does a good Wild podcast, and we really appreciate that. So if people are going to go out to the games, make sure to use that's all we got for this episode of Midwest Swing. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. I've been joined by Tom Schreier, producer Zach Bennett. We had Anthony Fennick of the Detroit Free Press on the phone. And next week, we'll bring back Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press. Thanks for joining us.